Hello, everybody. I'm Radio Johnny, and you're listening to Recovery Radio on KRFP 90.3 FM in Moscow, Pullman. Recovery Radio is an outreach of the Latah and Whitman recovery communities. You can find them on the web at latahrecoverycenter.org and on Facebook. The Latah Recovery Community is located at 531 South Main Street in Moscow, and you can contact the LRC by phone at 208-883-1045 or by email at latahrecoverycenter@gmail.com. The Whitman Recovery Community is located at 226 East Main Street in Pullman, and you can contact the WRC by phone at 509-715-1111 or by email at wrccprogrammanager@gmail.com. The hours in Moscow are 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. Monday through Friday, and at the Whitman Recovery Community, their hours are 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday. And Recovery Radio's purpose is to share with our community how addiction and behavioral health disorders affect us all and how we deal with them. We also share the personal stories of people in and around recovery, highlighting their experience, insight, and hope for continued recovery. And like I said earlier, I am Radio Johnny, and in the studio / conference room with me today is the ever-present, omnipotent, obsequious, purple, and clairvoyant, Miss Denise.
Hello, everyone. Johnny, thank you for that introduction. That was very nice.
You bet. I'll have to look some of those words up.
To see what they mean. I'm not sure if I knew what all of them meant, too. We don't know if it was a compliment or not.
I think it is.
We think it is.
It was meant to be. Put it that way.
That
intent is 9/10 of the law.
There we go. So I accept that. That's good.
So last week, we started talking about triggers, and I had pulled some information from a website called upliftrecovery.com, which I believe is a recovery service somewhere in the country. I'm not exactly sure where they're out of. But they had some interesting stuff on there, which I pirated and have been sharing here. And basically, what they talk about is understanding internal and external triggers in the context of addiction recovery. They offer insights on how internal and external triggers, substance abuse, can impact recovery, and strategies for managing both types of triggers. And they go on to say, recognizing and managing triggers is crucial for anyone navigating the recovery process from addiction. Internal and external triggers can dramatically impact one's journey toward sobriety. And they say, here we delve into detailed examples of each, providing a comprehensive look at the triggers you might face and the strategies for managing them. Okay, so last week we went through their list of, they have 13 examples of both internal and external triggers. So we'll just review a little bit of, for people who didn't catch us last week, their listing of internal triggers. And they define it, internal triggers refer to emotional or psychological states that evoke thoughts or cravings related to substance use. They originate from within and are often linked to personal feelings or memories. And so I'll go through the list here. Number one is stress. So high stress can lead to a desire for escape, often sought in previous habits of substance use. Stress management techniques like mindfulness and exercise are crucial in coping. Two, anxiety. Anxious feelings can push individuals towards substances as a quick relief. Therapy and relaxation techniques can mitigate this trigger. Number three, depression. The heaviness of depression might make substances feel like a solution to feel better or to feel something different. Number four, boredom. Idle time can lead to thoughts wandering to past behaviors. Keeping a busy schedule can help manage this trigger. Number five, loneliness. Without social support, one might turn to substances for comfort. engaging in community activities or support groups can alleviate this feeling. Number 6, fatigue. Exhaustion can weaken resolve. Maintaining a regular sleep schedule and a healthy lifestyle supports better energy levels and decision making. Number 7, hunger, a well-known trigger acronym, HALT, H-A-L-T. Hungry, angry, lonely, tired, highlights hunger as a basic trigger. Regular nutritious meals can prevent this. Number 8, anger. Intense emotions often seek an outlet. Substances should not be one. Anger management classes can be beneficial. Number 9, frustration. Like anger, frustration can lead to old coping mechanisms. Developing new healthy coping strategies is key. Number 10, low self-esteem. Boosting self-esteem through positive affirmations and achievements can reduce the impulse to use substances. Number 11, memories. Nostalgic memories of substance use can trigger desires. Creating new, sober memories can help. Number 12, physical pain. Chronic pain should be managed under medical supervision to avoid self-medication with substances. And number 13, sexual arousal, sometimes linked to past substance use contexts. Recognizing and planning for this trigger is necessary. So that's the internal triggers, and I think we prattled on pretty well about that.
Yeah, I think we did.
Was there anything there that popped into your head after we talked that maybe deserves a little deeper going into? There's one here that they call memories.
That's the one I was looking at too.
Yeah. They talk about nostalgic memories of substance use. It's something that I refer to and a lot of my friends refer to as euphoric recall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, remembering the good times mm-hmm. when, you know, for me it was alcohol, when it worked, you
right.
know, when
right.
it was a social thing and, mm-hmm. you know, get together at parties, everybody gets loud and silly, you know,
right.
and you
yeah.
had a great time.
The times when it was fun.
And there were no, you know, the worst consequence you suffer was maybe a little hangover the next mm-hmm. day.
Yeah. Yeah. It made me think of just waking up to dreams that are using dreams. That one's kind of rough. Yeah. I'm just
right.
like, wait a second. I wake up to a dream where, you know, I was going to use or use, and I'm like, I don't do that anymore. Why, you know?
Right.
That's kind of rough, too.
I have had, the classic drinking dreams where I wake up, like, in a cold sweat going,
yeah.
what?
I know, right?
What did I do?
Yeah.
I haven't had one of those in a long, long time.
Nice.
And the last one I had, I woke up, and I was, like, laughing. I'm mm-hmm. like, oh, what? Why?
Mm-hmm.
This is so silly. You know,
yeah.
this is why is this invading my,
right.
you know, sleep time? I don't need mm-hmm. it. And that was the last one I had.
Nice.
So maybe subconsciously I dealt with that.
Yeah, maybe.
You know.
Yeah, you're like, this isn't me anymore.
Yeah.
Go away.
Go away. Get lost.
So if you wake up laughing, you might have yeah. just kicked it.
Yeah,
that's
so,
awesome.
But that can be something that, you know, people can fall into those traps. I remember
yeah.
in early sobriety. You know, the multiple relapses I had in, you know, those early months, you know, you start feeling better.
Right.
You have those nostalgic memories or mm-hmm. that euphoric recall and, oh, maybe I can handle this.
Right.
And it just,
right.
and it never worked.
Right.
Know?
It wasn't that bad. Oh, but I'm better now. All those kinds of things.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. That
exactly.
makes sense. It makes sense.
Yeah. It's going to be, well, it's the battle cry of the alcoholic, which is, it'll be different this time.
Right. Yeah. And
I'll
I think,
handle it this time.
Yeah. And I was going to say, and I've talked to some people who've relapsed celebratory, just like, you know, oh, I've done so well and I'm going to celebrate, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's, there's right. a lot of different reasons, really.
Right. Exactly. All right. So moving on to external triggers, and we'll dive into these as we go through. Again, there's 13 of them. And they define it here, external triggers involve conditions or environments that can prompt substance use. They are external factors or situations that remind one of past behaviors. Now, I get that. That makes sense. Number 1, seeing drug paraphernalia. And they recommend you remove or avoid these items
yeah.
to prevent cravings.
Definitely.
Now, although drugs were part of my story, they weren't they weren't the thing to push me over the edge at the end. But bottles. I was a good alcoholic. I hid liquor all over the place, all over the house. And when I was, I don't know, 4 years sober or so, we moved from that house up here to Idaho. And in the last days, the last thing to pack up and clean out was the garage, which was a nightmare. Mm. So going through it, tearing through, you know, boxes and unloading shelves and stuff, I found no less than 20 booze bottles in varied states, from sealed, unopened, to, you know, empty and everything in between in that garage. And that's after I thought I had cleaned everything out.
Right.
So, like, I probably had another week-long run stashed in there. But I'd come home, I'd sneak into the garage, I'd hide the stuff, and then, you know, you don't remember.
Right.
You know, it's not like you're in a blackout. It's just like, oh, I had to do this quick. And so, yeah, I mean, there's paraphernalia.
Yeah.
That we're familiar with, you know, other substances, you know, a crack pipe, you know, rolls out from underneath your driver's seat or something like that.
Yeah, that can be bad. You know, early when I was in recovery and I was on the Latah County drug court program, I remember going into Safeway to get milk and walking down the alcohol aisle and thinking, man, that must really suck for people who struggle with this. Like, that'd be really hard. For me, it was like, you know, it wasn't like I was walking down the pill aisle or whatever.
Right.
You know, it wasn't like the pharmacy was open, because that would be really rough. So, I mean, I would assume for some people, especially early in recovery, like the fact that it's at the store or that you walk by it, I mean, I would assume that would be kind of hard.
Well, there was a time when those bottles would talk to me.
Yeah. Like, hey.
Hey.
How you doing?
Hey, come on.
Come hang out. I'm a good time.
Right. And I moved.
The bottle's just like, hey.
You said that too easily. But I actually, you know, I got sober in California. Mm-hmm. And everybody sells liquor in California. There's no state stores like there, well, used to be in Washington and like there is here in Idaho. Mm-hmm. So it's everywhere.
Right. I was going to say, so yours is like Arizona was. It's just in the grocery store.
Right.
It's not like it's a liquor store. The hard alcohol is in the grocery store too.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was everywhere. And yeah, it did talk to me in those early days. And I actually did make a concerted effort to just bypass the aisles.
I mean, I would have.
You know, just
rough.
Out of sight, out of mind, you know, sort of thing. And it was something that was recommended to me by, you know, people in my program. But yeah, so, yeah, for a lot of people, it is tough. And I know people who are in the program now who are fastidious label readers. Mm-hmm. Like prepared food, if it's prepared with wine, they won't buy it.
That's fair.
Now, the reality is whatever alcohol was in there was cooked off a long time ago.
Yeah.
And but it for them, it could just be the flavor, you know, would
that
catch them.
Yeah, that makes sense. Because that's part of why it's used in food, correct?
Right.
Okay, so for the flavor.
Sure. In theory, that's, because it adds a flavor, an accent of some sort. So, you know, and they do that. And also, actually, most of them are really careful with medications as well. Because, you know, it does talk about it here in external triggers. Well, the internal triggers that, you know, if you have to take a medication, you know, I have chronic back pain from arthritis, and I take an opioid medication under my doctor's supervision. I meet with them every 3 months and review it and see what's going on. And we have a plan going forward, because we know this will not be adequate forever, because it's only going to get worse. And there's really nothing they can do about it.
Yeah, you've got deterioration going on, huh?
Right, exactly. I got disc bulge. I got all sorts of great things going on. The joy of abusing your body into well into your 50s and then turning 70 this year. The bill is coming due for all that kind of behavior. So I'm not fearful of it. I'm aware of it. I know what the consequences would be were I to fly off the handle, so to speak, and start doing drug-seeking behavior, or God forbid, get out there into the underground and wind up a fentanyl overdose or something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, all of that is in my mind, but the most important thing to me in regards to that is just the fact that just because pills weren't the reason I got into Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't mean that the pills could tell me that a drink might be good.
Or it might
help the pills.
Yeah,
or I can rationalize all sorts of sick stuff in my mind.
Right.
But I have my wife watching me. I have, it's only been, I've been on them for a couple of years now, and it's only been probably in the last, not quite a year that she's finally said, look, you can meet your pills out to yourself. And I put them in a little thing so I know how many a day I'm taking and all that. And so she's finally good with it. But she'll know if something goes crazy. She's always been able to tell, like, when I was drinking, when I was... So anyway.
Yeah.
And my doctor knows, and we keep in touch. So
nice.
It can be handled that way.
Right.
But I can see how some people really, it's like anything that might be mind-altering, they're terrified of it, which I don't think is right, but... It's where they are in their journey.
Right, yeah, each person deciding what, and that's kind of the thing, is being able to have that discussion with your doctor, let them know that you're in recovery, and just talking things through. So that, because you don't even have to be someone who struggled with alcohol or addiction to wind up having issues with pain medication. I mean, it's just a risky situation, as far as you have to be cautious no matter who you are.
Right.
So let's just good practice, really.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just
not
practice.
Just for addicts anymore.
Nope. Exactly.
Okay. Moving on. Number two, people from past addictive behaviors. Mm-hmm. Limiting contact with individuals linked to one's substance using past is often necessary.
Yeah.
Well, you and I have all heard the you got to change your sandbox and your playmates.
Yeah. Yeah, just because you got to be careful. Yeah,
right. And that's why it was so exciting when we had the jail program here.
The
jail exit. Yeah, reentry program here, because somebody does their time at the county for a possession charge or whatever, and they come out. And it's like they boot you out the door at 6 a.m. And it's like, here you go. Here's your stuff. Bye. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have a connection to family anymore or friends that are clean, what are you going
to
do?
Right. And that's part of what I do as a coach, is to be able to help the person figure out what kind of resources and activities that they can go to so that they can meet new people and still have good activities that are fun, different kinds of things that they want to be a part of. Because that's kind of the thing is, back in early recovery, as I was changing things around, I would talk to people at Weeks in Vitry where I was going for outpatient treatment and stuff like that. So if they entered those doors, that's great. But it took me a while before I went and hung out with people like at the park or in social kinds of things. You know what I mean? Because I kind of had to feel it out. But I didn't really ever go over to someone's house, because there's always that risk of, even if someone's new in recovery, that risk that something could happen, that they could make a bad choice. So I've just been cautious.
Yes, and in the AA program, one of the great things about AA is the fellowship that exists there. I mean, it's really amazing how people are willing to put themselves out to, welcome a newcomer in, talk to them after a meeting, let them know, that, hey, this is a safe place to come. And if nothing else, you can stay sober for an hour or however long the meeting is.
Yeah.
And because... most ex-problem drinkers that I know isolated in their drinking. So it wasn't a matter of like, well, and some of them were bar drinkers, and so their whole world associated around a particular saloon. And they go back into those places in sobriety because they just don't know of, they don't have anything else to reach out to. So when I came into AA, I was like convinced I was never going to have any fun again because I wasn't going to be hanging out with those wild and crazy ones, the ones that would still hang out with me, which was few and far between. So having the fellowship there kind of instantly changed that sandbox and changed those people.
Yeah, it really does.
So it was really fortunate for me that way to be able to, you know, engage with those people. And most of my friends now are affiliated with that program. Yeah. Other than people like I've met through my wife who are out in that weird normie world, you know, of normal, healthy, temperate drinkers. And I actually enjoy going places with them. And, you know, even if it's like we went to Nashville with a group of them. And the whole time we were there, we were in honky-tonks for the most part, right? So everyone's drinking, having a good time. I'm drinking gallons of Diet Coke and Liquid Death, the spring sparkling waters. And, you know, I had a good time. Yeah. I didn't feel like I needed to drink to enjoy it.
And it can also be entertaining to watch other people who are drinking, not gonna lie.
Yes. So
and just be like, thank you, Lord, that I'm not doing the silly stuff they're doing. Yay. I mean, well, I have before, but
right, the occasional lampshade on the head is
right?
Fun though.
That is
okay. Speaking of which, bars or clubs, avoiding places that are strongly associated with past substance use is common in recovery strategy. And like I said, you know, I've known people who have like, are trying to be sober, but all they know, you know, their whole thing has been tuned around a bar or a club for years. I know one fellow who is like the top DJ in Phoenix. At the biggest bar in Phoenix, and he managed to get sober there and stay sober in that environment.
Nice.
But even he admits it was problematic at times, you know, for him.
Yeah.
And eventually he got out of there and started doing other things. But yeah, so, you know, if you hang around, there's an old saying in AA, if you hang around the barbershop long enough, you're going to get a haircut.
Right.
So yeah, best to avoid it. Now, AA also says, you know, once I've engaged in this spiritual program of action, I can go anywhere I want to go as long as I have a good reason for going there. Yeah. And there's a fellow in the program here who his wife likes to have a drink and watch baseball. So they'll go to a bar and she'll have her cocktail or beer or whatever it is, and he'll drink his soda water or Coke or whatever, and they'll watch the ball game. Right. And it's not a problem because they have a reason to be there.
Right.
And there's a camaraderie of the group that goes and does that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, to be avoided early on, probably a major necessity, but know that in time, you know, the potential for going to those places, you know, can be faced, you know, and having a plan. And they talk about that farther down. Number four, parties or social gatherings. Developing strategies to either avoid these or manage attendance without using substances is crucial. And I think this kind of goes back to people from past behaviors. You know, if you get invited to somebody who, you know, they're going to throw a pile of Coke out on a mirror in the living room.
And, right. Probably not a good idea.
Yeah. So probably a bad idea, you know, and just a miss. Now, people with alcohol problems, it's everywhere, right? Mm-hmm. And having a strategy for going to events like that, I often talk about my wife was involved. When I got sober, my wife was involved with a fundraising group for Children's Hospital in Oakland. And all of their events centered around alcohol because it loosens the purse strings.
Right.
And that's what they were there for, was to raise money. So, and as a good husband, you know, I would go and help with like pre-setup and go, you know, go to certain functions where I was needed.
Right.
But I made arrangements early on with my wife that if it got weird, I would excuse myself and go sit in the car and read my big book or a book or something.
Right. There's just a plan.
Just to be away from it. And right. that was a very workable plan. And going to parties, Christmas parties, you know, birthday parties, whatever, when I knew there was going to be alcohol served, I always drove myself, right?
Right.
Or if I went with my wife, I would have a high sign for her. It's like, let's get the heck out of here. You know, it's getting too weird. And she would even come to me and like, are you okay? And I'm like, yeah, I'm doing okay now. So, okay, fine. So having that support, and, you know, even for people who don't have a partner, they say, take your sponsor with you, you know, take somebody from the program with you.
Right, yeah, you to know, be able to have that feel person, safe. That's actually pretty
and
smart.
And there's absolutely nothing wrong with the white lie that says, oh, I got to get up early in the morning, you know, I can't make it tonight, mm-hmm. And the old... You know, if you're at a party and you want to excuse yourself, you know, don't do the Irish goodbye where you just disappear. You know, just go up to the host and, you know, like, again, make up a little white lie. Oh, I got to get up early tomorrow. Or I got something going on, or I'm supposed to go see somebody, and just gracefully yes. walk your way out.
You can scoot. Yeah.
There are times where, you know, if it's a really good drinky party, nobody's going to know you left. When. So that's, you know, that can be okay too if it's necessary. But yeah, you got to plan.
You do. Think of something ahead of time. Yeah, you can have a couple of options, but just like talk it through.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's smart.
Mm. Yeah. Okay. Conflict. Learning, number five, conflict. Learning healthy conflict resolution skills can prevent this trigger from leading to relapse. Oh boy, oh boy. I don't know of any alcoholic in my experience that has not been involved in conflict of one sort or another.
Yeah, it's kind of a human thing.
Yeah, it is. It is. And, you know, it can be from in the home. It can be at work. And probably the work one is the toughest one, because somebody asks you, or worse, tells you, you have to do something that kind of goes against your grain or your values or the way you understand the way the company is supposed to work. Mm-hmm. And you just kind of got to bite your tongue and do it. Mm-hmm. That is conflict, you know, in your own mind. And right. that can lead to all sorts of, you know, self-esteem issues. It can affect a lot of things in your head. And again, you know, build stress. And there we go. We right. need a release. We need relief from the stress.
Yeah. Makes me think of why it's important to have a good team of people, that whatever your week looks like, where you have people that you can talk to, people that can support you, mentors, counselors if need be, whatever that looks like, to be able to talk that out, you know, because right. there may be some ways that you might feel more comfortable with it, or some conversations that can happen. Yeah.
Right. And yeah. And sometimes for me, acceptance is the key. Yeah. Well, this is what they want. And mm-hmm. even though I don't feel this right. is the right way to proceed,
right.
I'm going to do what I'm asked to do. Mm-hmm. And I'm just going to let it go, because, you know, I'm not going to suffer any consequences for doing what I'm told.
Right.
And number six, financial pressure. Seeking financial counseling or support can reduce the stress related to financial issues. Yeah. Almost everyone I know, including myself, you know, coming out of active addiction, has had some sort of financial pressures. Mispayments on credit cards. Not paying the electric bill. Maybe behind on rent. All sorts of different kind of financial pressures. Not having a job possibly. For example, coming out of jail after an extended stay, so to speak,
right.
And finding out that your apartment's been emptied out by your landlord because you haven't been able to pay the rent for the 3 months you were gone. And
right. So
suddenly, not only do you not have a place to live, you don't have any stuff.
And there's a difference with handling finances when you're in active addiction and when you're not,
right.
And it's kind of like relearning those skills. What does it look like to make a budget the correct way and stuff like that? And I think that it is helpful to pull in a friend or a professional or something like that and talk that through. Like, what does it look like to make it work for you? Are you a spreadsheet person or just a pen and paper type of person to figure things out?
Right.
And then I feel like along the way, there might be more questions that wind up coming up in finances and stuff like that, that you can confer to somebody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had a friend who used to, he would get all his bills together and he would mail his utility bill to the water company, the water bill to his bank loan, and his bank loan to the electric company. And by the time they all sorted it out and sent it back, he would have bought himself some more weeks. I don't recommend that because some of those places will just cash your check and then you'll be in trouble again.
Right.
But there's all sorts of, financial pressures that can come down on you. And counseling is important because there are ways and programs I know that are available here in Idaho.
Yeah.
Private organizations, some churches are more than willing to help people out in a limited, sense. And I don't think we're unique for those people that might be listening to this in podcasts in other parts of the country, especially the big cities. I have a friend who's was living on the streets in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and there were all sorts of services available, not unlimited at all,
right?
But enough that was able to help him get things straightened out.
And, right. And I mean, even if you're a person that's not in recovery or has never struggled with these kinds of things, finances can be an issue that comes up or has come up multiple times even, And so just kind of keeping that in mind that, asking for help in this area is a human thing, and that's okay,
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there are people willing to help out for sure.
Yep.
Job loss. Speaking of financial pressure, number seven, job loss. Engaging in productive activities during job searches, such as volunteering or temporary work, can keep one's mind focused and positive. And, it's funny. After I retired, I got things straightened out in the house, got all the projects done that I wanted to. This opportunity came up to do this radio program for the Latah Recovery Center, and that was in 2017. And I had been involved with them since 2015, basically the same year I retired, the year they started up here. And so that opportunity came along, and I kind of jumped at it, and it's worked out well. I mean, Denise and I, we have had regular, time together, a couple hours once a week, and then takes me a couple more hours or so at home to, edit the show and get it ready to go for the radio, take out all the curse words that Denise she has such a potty mouth.
Whatever. He does all the legwork. It's cool.
Yeah. And then, spending time finding people to interview when we have those opportunities. It takes up a fair amount of time, but it keeps me focused, and it keeps me focused in the recovery mode.
It does.
Which is great. I mean, I'm kind of envious. I actually thought about taking on a position similar to yours here, but at the time I was on the board of directors.
Can't do both.
So I could not be Daryl's boss and Daryl's employee at the same time. And fortunately, I made the right decision. I did. I stayed with the board rather than taking on the position. And now you've got it, so that's even better.
Yeah.
So what, you know, and I know so many people that once they sober up, pursue careers in dealing with substance use disorder and counseling and all sorts of other things.
Yeah. So it's good to keep yourself connected in the areas that, you know, you struggle and have overcome or are making progress in, whatever that looks like. It's good. It's good for the things that you're working on and all that, whether it's volunteer and work or one or the other. It's just helpful to stay connected.
Well, and volunteerism looks good on a resume.
It really does. So. And when you've got lived experience in these kinds of things or whatever your lived experience is, you really know what it's like to go through something like that. And that's valuable to listen to other people and offer some resources if the person needs, you know.
Really, and it's, as long as we just touched on volunteerism, I'd like to remind everybody, the Latah recovery community is always looking for volunteers.
We are.
But right now, the Whitman recovery community is desperately seeking volunteers over there.
Yeah.
And they're at, just to reiterate, 226 East Main Street, right there on Main Street in Pullman. And you can get a hold of them at 509-715-1111 or email them at wrccprogrammanager@gmail.com I'm sure they will get back to you and see if they can't find a spot for you to do some volunteer work. You know, recovery experience is great, but not required. If you just want to get in there and lend a hand somehow, we do training, we do, you know, peer training, so you can learn how to, you know, help people, direct them different ways. If you have recovery experience, you know, all the better.
Right. And Days has been looking and has some people helping, but she's looking for people to lead classes there. There's a lot of different things that they're doing to try to help people have activities to do while they're in recovery. I mean, there's some different painting things and gardening and yoga and stuff like that. So, if there's something that you know how to do that you'd like to offer in a class, reach out to Day.
Yeah. Day Leader.
Yep.
She's fabulous. All right. Moving on. Number eight, media. Mm-hmm. Be selective about what you watch and listen to.
Yeah.
Media that glorifies substance use might not be suitable.
Yeah, I think when I come across stuff where they're glorifying substance use, I'm just really turned off by it. I'm just like, I don't want to watch that. It's really giving off the wrong impression to people, you know, making it seem acceptable and like a good thing to do. I just don't really, I'm not really into that.
Yeah.
I usually change the channel. I mean, it's okay if it's just a little bit of something. It is part of life. Mm-hmm. But if it's in a way that's like glorifying it, then I'm not really interested. Yeah.
Right. And like they've kind of played it down over the years. I mean, there was a time where, well, it still is on broadcast TV. They can't do advertisements for hard liquor, but the cable channels can. So, you know, there'll be liquor commercials with sexy women and, you know, the good looking men, you know, sipping different libations and whatnot. Yeah. I never found that all too irritating, probably just because I grew up and it was always on.
Yeah, we did grow up with that.
It didn't really contribute to, you know, my feelings towards alcohol. So, you know, when I saw it, it was just kind of a nothing burger for me.
That's fair.
But, you know, if you're, you know, listening to a podcast and guys are talking about smoking weed or, you know, doing ecstasy or mushrooms, microdosing, you know, any of that stuff, it's, you know, maybe wait until you're able to listen to that stuff in a more educational format, you know.
That's fair.
So and you know, hanging out in the barbershop, you know, it doesn't sound to me like stuff you want to do. Plus, there's so much good media out there that can help you. I mean, <Yeah. coughs> excuse me. There are so many sobriety podcasts mm-hmm. out there. I mean, it's amazing. You can spend days, listening to stuff that's actually helpful.
Yeah, exactly. I think that there's a lot of resources for walking alongside people that are wanting to be in recovery or working on different kinds of things, you know, have to do with their past or their present or whatever. There's stuff out there, yeah. Especially online. Yeah,
for sure.
This next one is something that we talk about during holiday time. So right. 9 is holidays. Planning sober activities and ensuring support during these times can help maintain recovery. Yeah.
Right. No, absolutely. And it kind of goes back to that parties and social gatherings, because
yeah.
a lot of those things happen. On top of the fact that, holidays can be very emotional times.
They can.
Especially if you have, you know, families that get a little too worked up, or families that aren't super close that only get together, and there's that one uncle that, always has to parade his political beliefs out, you know, contrary to everyone
right.
else. And
not wanting to hear it.
Yeah, and then, you throw some alcohol in yeah. on that and or Yikes. Substance, and it can get weird fast.
Yeah.
So same rules apply, plan ahead.
Yeah.
If you're thinking, I don't know if I can handle it, you can't handle it yet. Mm-hmm. Don't
yeah,
go.
Just wait. Yeah, just wait.
Be polite and be honest. I just don't feel like I can come right now because the environment's just going to be too hard for me.
Yeah.
I still love y'all. I mm-hmm. still wish I could be there. But right now, I just need me.
Right.
And people around me that are, my peers and are mm-hmm. supporting me at this time.
Yep, that's fair.
Because the time will come when you're strong enough to handle it, and you can also make a good choice then still if you don't want to handle it. Some people are that mm-hmm. way.
Yeah.
Some people can't wait to get back involved with their families. Some people may come from families where it is never going to be healthy mm-hmm. for them to go back in that environment, mm-hmm. Because of family addiction.
Right.
And it happens. It happens. Yeah. Okay, moving on. Anniversaries of use. Marking these with new healthy traditions can change their impact. New Year's Eve, St. Patrick's Day, Memorial Day, 4th of July is coming up. Mm-hmm. One of the high holy days of drinking.
Right.
And so how do you substitute not drinking for drinking in those cases? And again, it comes back to the same thing. Plan the event. Think about it beforehand. Mm-hmm. If people are going to be drinking and drugging, maybe it's not where you need to be.
Yeah,
figure
out something different.
Figure out something different.
Stay home and chill.
Go to a parade. Go mm-hmm. go watch a fireworks display. Mm-hmm. Yeah, stay home. Barbecue your own stuff. Invite some of your sober friends over.
Yep.
Throw a party. Mm-hmm. Throw a sober yep. party.
And if you're connected with different kinds of 12 steps or other programs, a lot of times people are doing different kinds of things. So maybe ask around and see what they're doing.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. absolutely. The last couple of years, I've had people come up to my house after a meeting on 4th of July mm-hmm. and just hang out, play cornhole, and we get a little food, little dessert stuff to have, and there's, sober drinks to have, and mm-hmm. and just hang out and watch the fireworks. I live on top of a hill, so I get to see almost all of North Moscow mm-hmm. spending their money on stuff. You can do things like that, but again, it's the plan ahead.
Right.
Think about it, make a good decision, and have an escape plan. Always mm-hmm. have an escape plan.
Yep, exactly.
All right. Seeing places associated with past use. Revisiting these places with a support person or avoiding them can reduce triggers. Again, mm-hmm. if you need to go somewhere for a good reason, maybe it's tradition that you go to someone's house to watch Super Bowl mm-hmm. and they're drinkers. As long as those people understand, that you're in recovery and you don't want to drink, they'll typically respect that if they're, you know,
right,
good friends of yours. And I'm not saying these are the people maybe you used to drink with a lot, but, you know, just acquaintances, and this is a thing you've done.
Right.
They may actually have invited you back after banning you because of prior bad behavior. So, you know, it might be good to do that. But again, you know, plan ahead, have your escape plan, and, you know, be honest with the people about, you know, I'll come, but, you know, I need to be safe. I need to take care of myself. So if I excuse myself at some point, don't take it personally.
Right. Just taking care of your recovery.
It's me, not you.
Yeah.
All right. 12, changes in routine. Keeping a structured schedule minimizes unexpected stress. Yeah. Having a routine is great. And get up at the same time every day. Try and go to bed at the same time. Schedule your day out to the best of your ability. Know when your meetings are. You know, get to work on time. Leave work at the appropriate time. Don't try and make up for financial issues by working a crap load of overtime. I did that. It's a big mistake. It was time I should have been. I feel I should have spent, you know, reconnecting with family and contributing just by my presence in my own home, you know, with my immediate family there. So, yeah, get a routine, try and stay in it. And, you know, it's not always possible because stuff happens. Mm-hmm. But if you know you got a routine to go back to, you won't get that feeling that everything's falling apart if something goes wrong.
Yeah, it can be really helpful to have a reason to wake up, a job or things that you're doing to keep your day moving.
Right.
Yeah, very helpful.
Well, and you may have a situation that comes along that's totally unexpected.
Absolutely.
That you need to shift gears and deal with, you know. And just knowing that routine is there to go back to, it can feel good.
Yeah.
And number 13, and we're getting close to the end here. Advertisements for alcohol, using ad blockers or choosing media that's less likely to feature such ads can help. And I don't recall seeing any ads for oxycodone or Vicodin or cocaine or meth. So this is probably more of an alcohol thing. And like I said, you know, broadcast TV, they can't advertised hard liquor on it, as far as I know. I don't think they've changed it. I think every time I've seen one, it's been on a cable type channel, which is subscription, so they can, a lot of those rules don't apply to them. But you know, there's beer and wine, and they make it all sexy and pretty and, you know, sparkly, and, you know, you're going to be 10 feet tall and gorgeous and all this nonsense. So yeah, so I mean, if you're, you know, watching a program that's sponsored by the Gallo brothers, you know, maybe you got to take it with a grain of salt, or, you know, maybe do time shifting, which is what I do. A lot of the programs I like to watch are on in the middle of the day when I'm busy. So I DVR them, as they say it. I record them.
Yeah.
And I come back and I can just breeze through the commercials. I don't have to watch
them
at all.
Fast forward.
So you can always do that. But yeah. And, you know, again, back to, you know, going into the grocery store, don't go down the alcohol aisle if you don't need to. I mean, just don't.
Go a different aisle.
Yeah. And you're not going to avoid it totally. I mean, like you said, it's everywhere. It's not like there's the pill store down the street, you know, for people who have those addictions. But then again, you know, just seeing those billions of ads for Ublocta or, you know, the different, you know, drugs that people are using for weight loss, you know, Ozempic and blah, 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 you know, just seeing those images of needles and stuff like that, I could see how it could be triggering to some people.
Yeah.
So you can't avoid it totally. Do what you can to avoid
it. A lot of the, like, Netflix and different kinds of things, you know, you don't have to really deal with that as much.
Right. Yeah. Well, and there's a podcast, I think Bill Maher, who's a commentator and comedian, sort of. And he has conversations with people, and they smoke weed, and they got booze on the table, and they're drinking. I wouldn't recommend that one.
Yeah, probably not.
You know, I mean, not until you got a little healthier and you actually want to hear drunken high people expounding on different things, opining, as they say. So anyway, that's it. That's cool. 13.
Yeah.
And we are flat up against the wall here. So
yeah,
going to say thank you, Denise, and
thank you
to everybody out there listening, both of you. And I'm going to close out with the usual. You know, if you think you have a problem with substances or alcohol or behavioral problems, you probably do.